Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, we're back for another episode of the Gear Garage Live Show. Thank you all for joining me. It'll be on Monday for the next month or so, probably. This is a show I try to do every week where I answer questions that have been submitted. You can submit them through Whitewater Guidebook, or if you have questions now, just throw them in the comments. So I have a little bit of cough every day. I'm sorry, I'm getting over a cold. But again, like, if you have a question now, throw in the comments. I love comments. Comments make it fun for me. It's interactive. Instead of just me talking to a camera, which I know you're all out there, but literally it's just me by myself in this room. And so please throw comments. You might be listening to this as a podcast. I'm sorry. That's a bummer for you. You really should listen to this live if you can. And let's start by talking about, how do I add this on here? The Upper Clackamas Whitewater Festival. And that's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's an event that it's been going on for, I don't know, 15 years, maybe more. It's not like a huge event with like tons of vendors and like camping and put in. Like, it's not like some events you've been to. It's a little bit more grassroots, locals event. People do travel from far away, but this used to just be like, I don't know, 30, 40 people from the local community getting together for a fun race on a Saturday or a couple of races. Now it's become a bigger event. And there are some vendors there. But really, it's just a get-together. We meet in the morning, talk a lot of smack, do some races, have a little party to take out. Or, I don't know, sometimes the party's on the river somewhere. Little party, small one. And then when it's over, we all go to the pizza place, and Carson have pizza, and there's awards, and just a fun chance to get together. It's sort of, to me, like opening weekend for the whitewater season. I know a lot of you went to Boatsmith, and that's probably like that too. I didn't make it down there. So for me, this is like opening weekend. It sort of signals that the season's starting. I usually, when there's a capo race, by the way, I usually win. Just so you all know, I just want to lay it down. I'm not modest about this. I usually kind of dominate, actually. And I've been challenged before, and I like the challenge. I want better boaters, like stronger boaters, to race because I like the competition. For me, I would love to give it everything I had and get second or third place because that would motivate me. That would make me like work for the next year, train harder, prepare better. This year, I'm like kind of training. I'm kind of getting ready because I'm pretty confident that I'll win. But I would love to have some pretty stout competition this year, some people that challenge me. Last year, some people did. I beat them down pretty hard. And that's just my opinion. I don't know. I feel like they beat them down pretty hard. Maybe they don't feel the same. But I would love to have some capo owners come out and race. If there's not a capo race, I usually enter the R2 competition, which is really fun for me because it's hard. And the competition is really stiff. And I don't think I've ever won the wind race as an R2 race. I've gotten second once, I think. I usually get third or fourth, sometimes worse. The R2 race is stout. And there's an R4 race, which I don't know. I'm not really into R4 racing. So if you want to, and there's also a kayak race. If you want to be a part of it, you can RSVP right here. It helps the organizers. Oh, it looks like it's through Facebook somehow. But RSVPing, clicking that button. I signed up somewhere else on this page somewhere. Maybe it's gone. Let's see. Oh, races. Let's click on this. Has a different race events. Somewhere here you can click a button. Oh, here, fill out this form. This just helps the event organizers have a sense of how many people are going to be there. And it's $30 to enter. It might seem like a lot of money to go boating, but it's supporting something. I don't know what it's supporting. These events are a lot of work to put on. So honestly, I hope the organizer is making $500 because getting us all, it's worth $30 to like have everybody there and have there be booths and have there be race safety, and the whole organization is a lot of work. And these events, you know, they're put on by volunteers. If they make money off of it, makes them do a better job and continue doing it. So I hope they're making money. Who knows? Maybe they're donating the proceeds to American Whitewater or something. But that is the Wind Fest, and it is a couple of weeks from now, March 22nd, on a Saturday. And again, oh, and for a capo racer, Jesse Fisher from Class 5 Adventure Gear put up $250 for the winner of the capo division. And I put up 100. I think I put up more last year. I don't know. I put up money last year. So if you beat me, you get 350. So hopefully that's motivation enough to win the race. Yeah, I want to win. I guess if I win, I get Jesse's 250, which is sweet. I'll take $250. That'd be awesome. Yeah. I want to be challenged, Jesse. Let's bring it. Like I like it when it's hard. And Jesse's been claiming that 10-foot oars are cheating for the race. There's no rules on how long your oars can be, how long your boat can be. There's no rules. It's capoating. And I only have 10-foot oars. It's not like I have a special set of racing oars. That's what I have in pins and clips. So I don't even have – I have 9.5-foot oarlock oars. But, you don't race with spinnies. You race with pins and clips. So, unfortunately, I don't even have short oars, Jesse. It's not like that's what I boat with. To not race with my 10-footers is to race with what I don't normally boat with. It's sort of like putting a paddle length, like, oh, your kayak paddle can only be so long. Like, I don't know. If you can handle the oars, I feel like you should be able to race with them. I don't think that's cheating. But we've already debated this online, so I'm not going. Are you going to bring me 9.5-foot oars? Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good. I like my oars a lot. It's probably not why I win, but man, I would say it's like 2%. It's like handcuffing myself. If I had short oars, it's like a little bit of a handcuff because I'm used to 10-foot oars. I'm used to the power of having the longer oars. And I'm pretty sure if you measure my oarlock to oarlock, my pin to pin, and use my formula, which is times 1.63 plus or minus half a foot, 10-foot is still within my formula. It's not something that's unwieldy. I would claim your oars are too short, honestly. I would claim that you're living in that world, but I don't think you want to have that conversation. Okay, so that is enough of the Upper Clackamas Whitewater Festival. Or not, sorry, I'm not Upper Clackamas. The Upper Wind Whitewater Festival. I'm the only one using, because I'm only able to handle 10-foot oars. The rest of you guys can't handle 10-footers. If you all, I'm teaching classes over the next 3 weeks. If you all want to get a lesson on how to do oar management, come to Hood River, take the class. I can share some of my oar management techniques with you so you all can handle 10-foot oars too, or longer than you're used to oars. Okay, enough smack talk. We got to get to work. Here we are. We're at today's show, and I haven't seen these questions yet, so hopefully I'm ready to answer them. The first one, what does your 2D versus 3D framework give us that the international scale of river difficulty doesn't already? So for those of you who don't know, I did a video, a Gear Garage video about 2D versus 3D boating. And I didn't do it to rate rivers. I did it to help understand why some techniques are needed, basically. I think... And a lot of the time I do teaching or I see boaters, I recognize that it's hard to understand why you need to ship your oars correctly. And when I say ship your oars correctly, I mean blades forward, handles back. Why you need to, what are the things that you have to do when you're, let me pull the thing if I have it right here. Yeah, it's right here. Why pulling yourself into eddies is so important. Understanding the difference between pushing and pulling and using both the downstream ferry. And just like proper setup early in the rapid, why these things are all so important. And again, if I'm teaching on a 2D river like the Rogue, I can tell you all these things are important, but you won't believe me because you don't need them. And if you're like a guide on the Middle Fork of the Salmon, you have this two-dimensional skill set that when you're challenged on like the Illinois or high water Middle Fork, if you don't have these 3D skills, you struggle. You make it, probably, but you struggle. And so the idea is to help conceptualize the difference between like flat boating versus steep boating. That's another way to think of it. It's just a conceptualizing. It has nothing to do with the international scale of river difficulty. the scale of river difficulty is so important for us to use so we can compare runs and we can know if something is at our difficulty level. And if you've done, this is where we get in trouble though. If you've done the Clackamas, the upper Clackamas, and you've done a class four rapid, it doesn't mean you're ready for the Illinois, a class four river. Hopefully people know that. They're like, oh, I've done class four. I've kind of touched it a little bit. The international scale of river difficulty says, hey, the Illinois, there's a lot of class fours. And so it allows us to put a rating on rapids. It's pretty good. And you know, it's 1 to 6. It's really 1 to 5. And honestly, for boaters, it's 2 to 5. So there's 4 different categories. If you look at my list, there's 2D rivers, gateway rivers, and 3D rivers. That's 3 distinctions. So my like theoretical 2D versus 3D thing only just distinguishes 3 types of rivers, where the difficulty rating does 6, but really, I don't know, 4 really for whitewater people. But there's so much nuance to the scale of river difficulty. There's 2 plus, 3 minus, 3, 3 plus, 4 minus, 4, 4 plus, 4 plus plus, 5 minus. There's class 4 with 1 class 5. There's class 4 with 1 portage. There's class 5 with 3 portages. There's class 3 plus with a bunch of flat water at the end. There, you know, there's just like the scale of river difficulty has so much nuance. So it allows you to explain a run. If you know how good you are, if you are self-aware, like, hey, I'm a class 3 boater. If it takes a class 3 skill set, I should be able to do that run. That allows you to look at a book or a website or whatever you look at or a YouTube video and say, I can do this river. It's within my skill set because that river is class 3. Now, maybe there's a class 4 on that run, but you're like, hey, I can portage it if you're kayaking or if you're rafting, it's a little harder. But it allows you to self-evaluate your ability level and decide what places you should and maybe shouldn't go. Okay, well, there's a lot more to this. Sorry. So that's a long explanation. You posted an interesting video about 2D versus 3D. Your argument for the distinction is solid, and I agree with most things you say. Most things? You should agree with everything I say. Nonsense. However, I don't really see the value of the system considering we already have... Yeah, this is 2D versus 3D is not... It's conceptual. It's not terrain rivers. It's just conceptual. And actually, it's very specific to rowing. It's a conceptual idea for rowing. The international scale of river difficulty applies to kayaks, canoes, rafts, catboats, SUPs, creature crafts, right? This is just an idea. The 2D versus this 3D thing is an idea to help understand why we need certain skills. And I'm saying, hey, for rowing, you need these skills that were up top. I'm not going to say them again. To be ready for the rivers, I'm going to say have a different character in terms of rowing specifically. So it's not as this is the international scale of river difficulty is really valuable, and I'm not at all changing it. This is about understanding, conceptualizing why you need certain skills to move on. When a new framework is invented, blah blah blah, some clear differences. Yeah, it is not a framework at all for. This is not competition for the international scale of difficulty. It's just a brainstorm that I had, an idea that I want to share to help clear up some why certain skills are needed specifically to whitewater rowing. Okay. Anyway, that's my over-analytic peer reviewer idea. Cool. Thank you. Yeah. And please don't use 2D versus 3D to rate rivers. It's not intended that way. It's more to introduce skills. yeah, cool. This is a cool comment, Anton. Thank you. Yeah, I just think it's when I'm rowing, most people are rowing are doing class 2, 3, and 4. People rarely row class 1. People rarely row class 5. Most rowing is in class 2, 3, and 4. So there's some 4 that's 2D and there's some 4 that's 3D, and they require kind of different skill sets. And hopefully helped you all understand why I harp on some specific skills. And honestly, like at the wind race, those of you that are 3D boaters, you that have these skills, you have good oar management, aka you can handle 10-foot oars. you can pull into eddies because you don't need to for the race, but it's a good skill. Being able to push and pull things, that's critical to the wind race. You can't just push the whole time. You're just not going to make it. You have to actually in the race to turn around and pull downstream a lot. You have to have the downstream ferry, which is will be a critical skill for the race. And your setup is huge. You have to go into some narrow spots, set up, and just power go through without using your oars to go through as fast as you can. So specific to the wind race, I think 3D boating is key to doing well. Okay, let's move on. Next question. Thanks for the question. Thanks for the peer review. Okay, have you test fit any of your blower adapters from the Bauer blower from Harbor Freight? So for those of you that don't know, for some reason my website's acting funny today. Here we go. We sell, I did a little blurb last week about this website. We sell things. We sell throw bags and flip lines and all kinds of cool ore stuff. The best stuff we have, I think, is all this rescue stuff. It's just top of the line. The stuff I use, it's solid. It's just the good stuff. You're not going to end up with, you know, you get an NRS pin kit. It's full of crap. This is the good stuff. Anyway, we sell these blower adapters for like Makita blowers, DeWalt blowers. They're really handy. They're pretty amazing. So the question is about that. Have we test fit any adapters with a Bauer blower from Harbor Freight? No. I don't even know what the Bauer blower from Harbor Freight is. Sorry. I'm really sorry. And we don't do returns. So if you buy one to test it and return it, please don't do that. Like, I would much rather you go buy one of the tools. We've made four of these. Please go buy one of buy the Milwaukee, the Ryobi, the DeWalt, Makita. Please don't buy one and return it. I'm not set up for doing returns. I really don't like doing returns. Okay. Whoa, this is long. Okay. I know you're super busy, but if you take a minute of your time to read this, I'd appreciate it. I'm a 16-year-old who loves everything outdoors. Some of my favorite activities include hiking, backpacking, fishing, and rafting. I'm trying to find a place to work this summer. My dad suggested I look into work in whitewater rafting. Okay, got it. He and his brothers were guides in the Grand Canyon, and they have said great things about their experiences, so I thought working on the river would be amazing. I would love to work in any position where I get time on a raft. However, I have little experience rowing one. My overall goal would be to work up to being a guide over the next few years and maybe even work in the Grand Canyon at some point. This summer, I'm available from May 17th to July 27th. I'm open to doing absolutely any work I can, singular multi-day trips. I understand that being a swamper would be the best starting point to work up to being a guide. So that's what I'd prefer, but I'm not sure if that's possible at my age. If you have any position available or any advice from me, both would be greatly appreciated. Yeah, cool. Just some general advice. If you're talking about working for us, I just don't even, unfortunately, I can't hire people younger than 18. I can't even bring you on as anything. Like for a lot of reasons, I've learned it's a mistake to start that young. Honestly, like starting that young seems like a good idea. It's kind of a mistake. I think it's a mistake. I think the problem with starting that young, here's the problem. If you start when you're 16 or 17, you're a fourth year guide when you're 20 or 21. But you're not mature enough to be a trip leader. And so you end up being like a fourth year guide, fifth year guide. And the people that start when they're 20, 21, who only have 2 years of experience, maybe 3 years of experience, start trip leading when you have 5 or 6 years of experience. And you start getting cocky and annoying because you're not ready to trip lead because of your maturity, but you've been guiding longer, maybe just for that company, maybe in general. And it just doesn't set you up for success. And so I've learned that when I hire a 16-year-old, when you're 20, you're probably really nice when you're 16. You start getting super annoying when you're 20. And I found it as a mistake. There's also some insurance reasons why we don't hire anybody younger than 18. When you say swamping, I think you mean that's specific to the Middle Fork of the Salmon, like going on the sweep boat maybe, or following the sweep boat and helping set up camp. I think that's what you're talking about. Or just rowing a boat along some trips. I'm going to say that would be a cool job this summer as a 16-year-old. It'd be an awesome job. It's hard to get. So my advice for you is you need to go to a guide school for sure. 100%. Like you have skill. You need to pay for one. Don't go to a free one. You know, the free ones are just like, they just tell the best guide to go teach some stuff. And you do like a low, like a cheap, simple guide school, eating mayonnaise sandwiches. And I don't know. It's just like, it's not the best. I would pay for a good guide school. And honestly, the more you spend, the better it's going to be. It's like a lot of things in life. So I would try to spend some money, get a good education, a good base education. And then you need to go on day trips. This, like, I know you want to go be at the Grand Canyon and probably want to go do the rad trips, but you need to go do day trips. And that could be maybe when you're 16, you could maybe do that on the Deschutes River, maybe the American River. But like, you need to do 2-3 years of day trips. And then when you're 19 or 20, you have a good education through a guide school. You've taken a warfare course. You've taken a rescue course. And you have a couple of years either volunteering or working day trips. Then you can start applying to work for multi-day companies. That's what my suggestion would be. Now, if you're like, no, I want to right away, right now, I'm 16, do the rad stuff. That's not going to work. That's not patient. You need to be more patient and put the time in. So, my advice would be go to guide school, go to a good one. Volunteer your first summer as a 16-year-old, I don't see how you're going to get paid to do anything because I'm not sure what you can bring value to the company. So you're going to volunteer somewhere, just help and wash trucks, clean the inside of the trucks, I don't know, do shuttles, maybe feel lucky when you get to go on the river, you know, then maybe you get a guide day trips as a 17-year-old and 18-year-old, then think about applying to multi-day companies. So that's the advice I have. I know that's not what you want to hear. You want to hear like, oh yeah, sweet, I'll give you this awesome dream job. But unfortunately, that's going to be hard to do. Mike says he went to a guide school that placed him in a lodge in Alaska. Yeah, a guide school is a great way to get into it. And like I said, usually when you spend money on it, it's taught by better instructors and they have better connections. It's the better way to go. And Mike was 22. Yeah, 16 is young. And again, I've hired is the wrong word. I've brought 16-year-olds on before. And looking back, I can't think of one time that it was a good idea. And we only do multi-day. So that's the multi-day world. Because you're not, again, they're not going to be mature enough to lead multi-day trips until you're at least 20, probably 21. So it's 4 years of you gaining experience and getting cocky. And you still won't be ready to lead trips because of maturity. So you need to get some day trip experience. And then when you're like 20, 21, 22, 23, you can work multi-day trips if you find that job, and then think about the Grand Canyon. So this getting a job in the Grand Canyon is a long process. You have to be pretty committed to guiding. Okay, hopefully that answers your questions or gives you my thoughts. All right, flipping Greenwall, 3-person, 3-boat trip on the Illinois. Flow is 1,700 and dropping. Awesome, that's good living. Like 1,700 and dropping. 3 people, 3 boats. You have a good safety. Like, I'd rather have 4 people, 4 boats, but I'll take 3 people, 3 boats, especially if I like the other 2 people. We ran a single boat down while 2 people set safety below Harvey. Harvey's the hole at the bottom of Greenwall. After we got a single boat through, the 2 of the boat captains went up to run the rapid. During the run, the first boat flipped just prior to getting to the doors. Oh, ouch. How? Oh, that hole maybe. That hole in the entrance. The captain did an amazing job of self-rescuing himself and made it to the shore prior to swimming down the correct move. That's great. Now my question. We had a boat flipped moving downstream. I decided to pull out the eddy and work on getting the boat moved to shore. I didn't get the boat into an eddy until the rapid after Greenwall. While you give tips on getting boats recovered in the situation, I think you meant will you? And will you give feedback on our safety plan and how we ran to set safety? Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to go. I think it depends who I'm with. So if that first boat flips, the first boat, that's a good technique. Have 2 throw bags at the bottom. Have somebody go first while there's 2 throw bags down there. So if that person flips, you have 2 throw bags. To get them. If that person flips, their boat is gone, by the way. There's nobody to get the boat. But hopefully with 2 throw bags, you can get the swimmer to shore. So Yeah, it's decent. I think that's a technique. I think it's fine. And then I'm gonna hopefully get back to my other technique idea that I have. We just do it now. I'd probably just go 1, 2, 3. Run all three boats together. That way, if boat one flips, boat two hopefully doesn't flip and can help them. If boat two flips, boat three hopefully doesn't flip and it goes against them. If all three flip, that just sucks. You probably shouldn't have gone to begin with. So depending on who I'm with, if somebody's super nervous or I'm worried about, or several people, I've done that before where I've gone first with throwbacks at the bottom so that there's no chance we all three flip. But if the other two boaters, you guys are all pretty solid class four boaters, I think I would just go three together. That way you can clean up any mess that happens. But anyway, you had a, both techniques work. Both are smart. As long as you thought about what happens if you have downstream safety the best you can, you had a good plan. There's other ways to do it too. We had a boat flip moving downstream. I said, plug. It's really hard to get a flipped boat to shore. It's really hard. And so good job getting it to an eddy after green wall. Like, it's not easy. The heavier it is, the harder it is. And hopefully you knew the river. Like, what if you went downstream by yourself to get the boat and you flipped or you swam? You have no safety. So that's a little bit worrisome. I think, I don't know what I would do in that case. It's kind of, it's like 50-50. Sometimes I would just like, hey, let's all regroup and then let's go down as a team and find the boat. Because it will probably stop somewhere. It will stop somewhere. And again, if you're solo running ahead, especially when you're trying to push a boat to shore with another raft, that's when you get in trouble because you're not paying attention. You're so focused on the boat. You don't see a rock that you flip on or you pop an oar and hit your head. It's just a high stress situation being by yourself going after a boat, which is not people, right? Let's focus on people safety first, not equipment. So I think I would just let the boat go. Probably. And then let's get that person. Let's three of us regroup in two boats and then two boats go downstream and just be thoughtful. I probably have one boat when you get to the raft, get ahead of it and act as sort of a downstream safety in case something happens. And then the second boat pushing it to shore, something like that. But every situation is a little bit different. I didn't get the boat. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Feedback on your safety plan. You're right. Yeah. I think you guys had a good safety plan. It seemed like it worked solid. There are more than one ways to do it. And it super depends on your crew. Yeah. Who the people are is the one person who swam, are they hurt? Do we know that they're hurt? Right. Like, I definitely wouldn't leave before I got like, I'm okay. Right. Like, that person could have got super hurt. And then you just separated yourself from an injured person. So, yeah. And Little Greenwald does come up pretty quick. But if the boat, I mean, honestly, an upside down boat will probably float through Little Greenwald better than a right side up boat with you in it. Or it might get hung up. Who knows? It's hard to say. But, you know, if you didn't get ashore, it might have gone through Little Greenwald. And it also depends a little bit. Is this a cat boat? This is a light boat that who cares if it gets hung up? Or is this a heavy boat full of stuff and things are not rigged in very well? And is your, like, stove in there? Like, is there something you need in there? Is the first aid kit in there, right? Like, what's in the boat? How badly do you need the stuff? Is it just a light cat boat with your sleeping bag? Like, I would let that go. If it's a key gear boat with important things you guys need to eat and camp, I might be more motivated to go downstream after it. So, yeah, a lot of good points. All three small cats. Yeah, I'd probably just, if it was me, I'd probably just let it go. Like, it's just a cat. If it gets pinned on a rock somewhere, it's going to be pretty easy to get off. It's probably going to eddy itself out, actually. Like, a lot of times I've been around people chasing boats, and we're pushing and pushing and pushing the boats to shore, trying to get to shore, trying to get into an eddy, and we can't do it. We keep messing up because it's really hard to do. And then it magically just eddies out on its own. That's usually what kind of happens a lot of the time. So, yeah, I would say I think you guys did great. And good on you, man. Three boats on the Illinois, three cat boats at 1,700 and dropping. like, good for you. That's just good life. And if you, you know, yeah, if all the things can go wrong, this is pretty minor. So that's and one thing I want to point out, I'm kind of like my brain is moving away from like winter mode, which is me running the business, into like teaching mode and things we'd be teaching the next month. You know, one thing about class 4 boating is you're going to make mistakes. Like mistakes are going to happen. And so it's less about like your individual rowing skill is super important, of course, but like having proper safety is just so important, and thinking about a plan if something goes wrong and having people with you that are like tight and thinking about the stuff so that when the problem happens, you have a nice, tidy recovery. And this sounds like a nice, tidy recovery, right? This could have gotten out of control, especially if homeboy didn't swim himself to shore before the correct move. That would have been a bad swim. So, like, good job having a good, tidy recovery. That's really, I think, a crucial part of class 4 boating is, like, having a plan for, you know, downstream safety for each other, executing it. And then when something goes wrong, like, the cleanup is never perfect. It's usually just really good, like you did, or crappy and embarrassing. So I think you guys did great. Nice job. All right, and more questions. Wow. Nope, that's it. That's the last question. Wait, blank slide. Okay. Well, I think that's it, unless anybody has any more questions. Thank you all for watching and for supporting the show. And maybe some of you are going to look at River Hardware. Why can't this whole thing's acting funny today? There we go. Let me see if I can get this on here. There we go. Maybe some of you might go shopping in River Hardware. It's really fun to sell things. So thank you all for checking out the show. We have, let's see, what's one thing I can tell you we have that's really cool? These flip lines are rad. These are flip lines that I've custom designed and had produced. And I think they're perfect. They're really strong, although they're not meant for climbing. They're a great length. They fit in your PFD really well. They look cool. Look at that cool green accent. We got tons of photos for you to check out how we used them and how we use them. So we have tons of carabiners. Just grab some carabiners. We have some really high quality. They're expensive, I admit, but we have some super high quality carabiners. So if you're looking for a carabiner, check out the store. And yeah, that's it for this episode. I don't see any more questions, so we're going to end this one out. Thank you all for watching.